President Obama says he picked his Supreme Court nominee, Merrick Garland, in part because Garland is a moderate who has long been praised by Republicans. No matter, Republican leaders in the Senate have not budged. They're still refusing to even consider Garland or hold a hearing on his nomination. We ask NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg to take a look back at his 19-year record as a judge.
Three of the current Supreme Court justices came from the same court where Garland now serves as chief judge, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia.
We think of it as the second most important court in the land, but in fact, it is the single most boring.
Tom Goldstein is publisher of SCOTUS Blog, the leading Supreme Court online publication.
It's a court that only lawyers could love because they deal with so many administrative issues like how phone companies should be organized and how power plants should sell electricity and on and on and on. Practically important, but not very interesting.
In short, the D.C. Circuit, as it's known, deals with the regulatory state, the whole alphabet soup of federal agencies. For that reason, the court rarely deals with hot-button social issues like abortion, gay rights, the death penalty, religion, or affirmative action. Still, conservative activists see Garland's record as tilting distinctly to the left. The Judicial Crisis Network has already spent $4 million on ads like this one in 10 states.
There is no painting over the truth. Garland would be the tie-breaking vote for Obama's big government liberalism. The Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms? Gutted. Partial birth abortion? Legalized. Unaccountable agencies like the EPA? Unleashed. Moderate? Nice try.
Proving some of these assertions, however, can be difficult.
I think the evidence that is being cited for the accusation that Judge Garland has some bias against Second Amendment rights is from thin to non-existent.
Miguel Estrada is a conservative Republican lawyer whose own nomination to the D.C. Circuit was stalled by Democrats during the George W. Bush administration. Estrada notes that the charge that Garland is hostile to gun rights stems from a case challenging the District of Columbia's ban on handguns. In 2007, a three-judge panel, not including Garland, ruled for the first time that there's a constitutional right to own guns for self-defense. Afterwards, Garland was one of four judges, including a conservative Reagan appointee, who voted for the full court to rehear the case.
The rules say that the full court may wish to rehear the case itself when the case raises a question, and I quote, of exceptional importance.
Estrada says it certainly was of exceptional importance since no court of appeals had ever before ruled there was an individual right to own a gun. Ultimately, he notes, the Supreme Court, too, thought it was important since it agreed to review the lower court decision and sustained it. But Carrie Severino of the Judicial Crisis Network says Garland was signaling his own opinion.
His vote suggests that he doesn't think that the Second Amendment even requires you to be able to have a gun for your own protection in your own home.
She similarly defends the claim in her organization's ad that Garland's record has allowed the EPA to run amok with bureaucratic regulations.
The Supreme Court's role is to be a check on the other branches of government, not to simply rubber stamp and green light whatever they want to do.
Estrada replies that for more than three decades, the Supreme Court has said that when a statute's language is unclear, the courts are to defer to agency regulations. And that, he says, is not a particularly partisan decision, since the courts tend to defer to Republican administrations when they write conservative regulations and Democratic administrations when they write liberal ones.
That is one of the rules of the game. Its application does not call into question the judgment of the judge who's just applying, you know, the rules that the Supreme Court has set forth.
It's not just conservative activists who object to Garland's record. Liberal activists do, too. They note that Garland, a former prosecutor, is less sympathetic to the rights of criminal defendants than most of his liberal and even some conservative colleagues on the appeals court. And there is quiet criticism, too, from liberals about his votes on national security issues, particularly the treatment of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Most prominently, in 2003, Garland and two Republican-appointed judges agreed with the Bush administration that the courts had no jurisdiction to hear the claims of wrongful imprisonment brought by Guantanamo detainees. The decision was subsequently reversed by the U.S. Supreme Court. Ultimately, the biggest objections to Garland come from conservative activists who say that even if he's a moderate liberal, he's still very different from the man he's nominated to replace, Justice Antonin Scalia. SCOTUS Blog's Tom Goldstein.
Conservative activists are certainly right that Merrick Garland would tilt the Supreme Court very seriously to the left, but that's because he's a Democratic nominee and he's breathing. Anyone appointed by a Democratic president is going to be much more liberal than the arch-conservative Justice Scalia. But among potential Democratic appointees, he's as good as conservatives could ever reasonably hope for. He is really down the middle.
Indeed, Garland rarely dissents. He is seen by judges of all ideological stripes on his court as a genuine consensus builder. In his 19 years, he's authored just 16 dissents, but one of them tells you a lot. The 2004 case concerned the False Claims Act, the government's main litigation tool in guarding against fraud, and whether an Amtrak employee named Edward Totten could go forward with a whistleblower claim that two companies had delivered defective rail cars. Sitting on the three-judge panel with Garland was then-judge, now Chief Justice, John Roberts. Roberts and another judge ruled against Totten, saying that the False Claims Act only covers fraudulent bills presented to the government, and Amtrak is not the government. Garland, in dissent, replied that the government gave Amtrak the money and paid for the rail cars. He said that Roberts' narrow reading of the whistleblower law would leave large amounts of government money unprotected. Garland was vindicated a few years later when Congress passed a series of amendments to the False Claims Law, and the Senate report said specifically that the amendments were to correct the D.C. Circuit's, quote, erroneous interpretation of the law. One of the three co-sponsors of the amendments was Republican Senator Charles Grassley, now chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who is refusing to hold a hearing on Garland's nomination. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.